back, everyone, to the next edition of the FCC podcast. This is your host and current commissioner, Kirk Swanner. This meeting is the recording of our third and final summer summit series of 2024. We had Todd from Quick Cut on to discuss our partnership, also discussed items as our affiliation for the 24-25 season, also U23s, and finally the sevens format for 2024 in the fall. Enjoy. All right, guys, welcome back. This is going to be our last meeting for the summer. We got the one and only Todd DeNoyer, not Marlena, from Quick Cut here joining us. Todd, how's it going, man?
Good.
All right. So, gents, if you guys have any questions, now's the time to ask. But I think Todd has been a wonderful partner with us. I think he provides us really good value at a awesome, you know, some good services. Granted, some of the stuff has our hiccups, and I'm sure he's here to talk about that. But at the value which he provides, it, I think we can't beat it. If you're not happy with it, find me an alternative. But I'm not listening to you complain unless you put some work in. But Todd, you want to talk about some of the issues that we had last year as far as, you know, whatever?
Yeah. Eckerd was in a real bad spot. I didn't get good cellular service. And we're, you know, we absolutely have to have cellular service in order to stream. And I tried Verizon and I tried T-Mobile and neither one of them worked. I also tried AT&T and that didn't work. So that where their field is, I don't know if there's a way to get internet out there, but Florida, for some reason, when they had a lot of stuff going on the weekend and there was a lot of people there, the T-Mobile worked a lot better than Verizon did. But I'm going to try to go over to Elon Musk with the
Starlink.
Yeah, Starlink. They've got the smaller versions now, but the big version's not that big. But I was going to try Starlink this year with on because is it just three fields this year? What's the size? So
we're going down to six teams, so it'll be you know, two pools of three. It's going to be seven game regular season. So you got the three northern teams, three southern teams. Double round, you know, double round robin within your division, and then once for the opposite. So that's the seven games total for the regular season plus the postseason games, you know, two semis and a final. And then we also have the sevens tournament, sevens championship. So, you know, last year was at Eckerd, may go back to Eckerd again this year. You know, from we need to talk about the sevens here afterwards, but yeah, so we'll have those are the events we got. And also, full transparency, everyone. We do have someone called Graham. He's now an FRU like employee, and his job, I tasked him to, his job is to like find sponsorship. So I asked him to go find a sponsorship to pay for all the services. So the Starlink is more expensive, right? Because last year, including the cost, was AT&T or T-Mobile. It was whatever, what service were you providing? What internet were you using then? Cell service.
I ended up going to T-Mobile for everything.
So is it like something you have to get from T-Mobile as far as like a big hotspot or something?
It's just a SIM card, but I was using Cradle Points and they're like, I think $900 a piece. Okay. And then it was $50 a month per SIM card. So I had four of them last year. So I was paying $200. Starlink is $150 a month per unit. So if I've got three units, I'm going to pay $450 a month. And then I have an initial purchase of $500 for each unit.
Yeah. Eckerd is in Division Two. So the only problem jobs from last year would be to Florida. And so maybe as a cost saving measure, maybe don't buy three of them, maybe buy one or two of them, you know, and then we just know where the tough ones are at. Yeah, because I know that I
never had a problem at Florida State or at UCF. It was, you know, Eckerd and Florida was the tough ones.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like maybe we get away with just one. That might be a potential opportunity. Because I know that when I was working as an assistant on-site project manager, we go to the construction sites. Yeah, we had to get a Cradle Point. And like, yeah, it doesn't always work. You know, Ken, I'm sure you're out in the sticks. You know, like, are you experiencing the same issues with trying to get Wi-Fi?
At my house, I have all kinds of problems. I mean, I can't get it unless I use my DSL. Get Wi-Fi. I can't even get a cell signal to make calls half the time. But there at Florida, you're right. When it's busy, those cell towers are just—they're tied up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, what's all? Because previously we also would have access to the QuickCut online platform, right? Which is like a competitor for Huddle, which is a video analysis and review that you can give out. You know, coaches can put together playlists for the players to watch and everything, right? Is that still part of the process?
And
Yeah.
I just met up with some guys in Scotland that are doing AI for rugby, and right now they're just doing four categories. But I said, yeah, I'll talk to you guys. I'm sure you guys be games. No, there's no cost, and
Okay.
but not everybody used the stats 2 years ago when we did it. I don't think anybody uses stats except for Patty at UCF.
UCF. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been trying
Here's a
but
question.
just that but just I couldn't make it happen yet.
Do me a favor, raise your hand if you know how to use the stats on Quick Cut.
I
And
know how
then
to use. Yeah.
there's like the emoji reactions. I was trying to see because it'll pop up on the screen because most
Oh,
people have their
okay.
videos turned off. But you can straight up get and see it. And then if you want to learn how to do it, you know, like give me a different reaction. Great, Gomez. So Gomez, you know how to use them?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I just, haven't gotten around to assigning someone to do it, teaching someone to do it. I just do Rugby Explorer.
So yeah, so I mean, it's just a bit of work that we have to assign someone to better utilize. But it's a tool that we everyone has access to, and you know, video analysis is going to be a huge part, right? Because we didn't know where we're at as far as coaches to know where we're going to be coaching.
One of the things that they wanted me to do, and I told them I would do this for them at no cost to you guys, is I'd add a second camera. So, and in some cases, I'd even add a third camera. So there'd be two, one tight and one wide at midfield, and then there'd be one in the on the end line.
Yeah,
So.
so I have had Diego, you got a question?
Yeah, just on the stats portion of Quick Cut, is there some sort of like online a like a online training or something? How to use it? Because I think we came in late, so we didn't understand. Just trying to figure out how to use it.
Patty would Patty works for Quick Cut. He's one of the assistants at UCF, and he'll take you through
Pat McNeil.
Okay. Yeah, look, I just need his
He's on
email
the
maybe.
I'm pretty sure he's in the email chain. So if you go back and look for Pat
Oh,
McNeil,
okay. Pat McNeil, perfect. Yeah, I'll get with him because yeah, I would love to use it. I think it's I we found out about it. I really found out about it maybe halfway through the season that gave us all that information. And I just not we never got around to using it, but we can definitely use it.
Cool. Yeah, Pat, as far, sorry, Todd, as far as the camera angles, that'd be great. That'd be great. 'Cause I know that there was some questions here from folks about whether it be zoomed in or not, and like how, you know, like showing the game from a spectator standpoint is one thing, right? Showing the game so that the coaches, what the coaches want to see is kind of a different stat. So like gents, like if there's only one camera, what do you guys want to see, or what are some of the problems you had as far as watching film? I know, and then there's another question that's going to come from Matt Guest as far as the camera, the film skipping, buffering, and stuff like that. But that'd be a different question. But as far as like zoom in and stuff like that, gents, what do you guys want if it's only a single camera?
Not a lot of grass in the beginning for our matches. It was just zoomed out all the way, and you can just see all this grass, and the play would be happening in the far right corner, and I wouldn't even be able to tell if someone was rucking or anything. But that got cleaned up. Charlie sent me how to tape rugby matches quick sheet, and I gave that to Todd and he gave that to his operators and it got cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're too tight, all you can see is a ruck. You don't get to see, you know, like your shape of your team in attack or defense. And then if you're out all the way, you can't see the details of the breakdown. So, yeah, did that sheet talk about zooming in and out as far as into the contact point and then back out and everything?
Yeah, it was kind of like, when there's action, you zoom in, and then as the play slows down, you zoom out.
any questions or comments, gents? Is that accessible?
Oh,
Acceptable?
and we got to be, and I think we got to be uptight on set pieces, and then of course, as action goes, pan out.
So scrums and line outs.
Yes.
Kickoffs are technically a set piece. Do you want tight on kickoffs?
We could be, and then, but that, action happens pretty quickly off the kickoff. That'd be a quick pan out.
Yeah. All right. So stay out for kickoffs with scrubs and line outs. Be tight.
Would there be any value in a drone footage?
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. 1,000% yes.
Some of the
Yeah, man.
drones right now are the batteries are going about 50 minutes if it's not real windy. And so I could keep them up for almost the whole half. Well, it'll be real tight.
Yeah. I mean, I think a drone video would be great because you get to see all the shape, and the viewpoint which you get it from would be incredible.
Right.
We've used it sometimes in our trainings. We've had some people come out, and it's a great way for us to be able to look at the way everything is looking.
You guys don't have my drones on.
Say it again, Gavin.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
My only concern, Todd, is they'll be investing a whole bunch of money for free, right? Like you're a small business and you can't do anything for free, so as you shouldn't.
Well,
Same
I
with
would get one to start off and see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, I think doing that is being an incredible partner with the conference, and I really appreciate it. Any other feedback as far as kickoff times or communications or any of that? Then we had one miscommunication last year where the kickoff time changed and didn't get to communicate, and there wasn't a video coverage. So basically, guys, make sure that games, kickoff times. You're communicating to Todd. Sorry, Todd, is there someone in particular? Like, I know you have an assistant too. Like, who's the best person to communicate with as far as kickoff times?
It's probably me. I'm the
Okay.
one that coordinates. We're kind of slow that time of year. We 90% of our work is right now with the football season, and so we're a little bit slower, and I can handle all that.
Okay. Matt was talking about with FAU, but sometimes they would get the film, I think on Quick Cut, he said, and it would. It would get frozen for like 30, for like seconds at a time. Right, Matt? He's muted.
So
You took, yeah, go ahead.
I had a question about that because I understand streaming the that it would pause because of the connectivity and all that stuff. But what I didn't what I thought it was being recorded so that if we played it back on, played the recording back, that the skipping and all that delays would be gone. But what we found out is we were seeing it on the replays too.
On YouTube replays or quick cut replays?
I think on both. I know on
On
YouTube it did, but I think it was happening in the quick cut, if I recall.
quick cut, we upload the raw footage from the SD card. We don't use the stream to upload the quick cut. So there
Okay.
shouldn't be any pausing.
All right. Let me verify that then.
On YouTube, the stream goes live, or it it's tape
Right.
delayed, and you can, and so it's going to be whatever the stream was. Now, in some cases, I took the stream down because it was absolute shit,
Yeah.
and then took what was in Quick Cut and uploaded that to YouTube.
So every game, the video camera has an SD card in it and is backing up the game to the SD card. So if something were to happen connectivity wise, the game will be put up later from the data from the SD card. And the SD card is what's used for the actual quick cut video footage.
Right.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Yeah, it sounds like mine was probably YouTube video related complaints too, that if I would want to verify that the quick cut video messed up, if you guys are, it sounds like it's a mistake on our part, not yours.
Yeah, I don't think everybody logged into QuickCut even last year.
That was my
That's what
next
I was about to
question.
ask about. I was about to ask how is it that how do I get my login? How do I make sure that I go to the right place? And where should, is it an app? That I didn't, I to be honest, I don't know.
Yeah, you can use it on a mobile device. We have an app for mobile device, whether it's a tablet or a phone. And we have a desktop version as well.
Beautiful.
Todd, do I need to, should I just like schedule a training with Pat
Yeah.
and like we'll record it and we'll put it all up?
That would
And
be amazing.
then we'll do that. Then a
I
couple
was
weeks
going to
from
ask that same question.
now. You've been around a couple weeks now, Diego. I can see where you're going with things. But I appreciate it. Cool. Anything else?
Yeah, I will say working on the computer on the app is definitely the easiest way to do it. Like doing it through the phone is a little bit more difficult if you're just trying to watch, yourself. But one additional thing I have, which is more of a cosmetic thing, is when the games are on. It would there's been some a few games where basically like the graphics, some of the times the graphics look super good, like really professional, and other times it looks like they're just like kind of stamped in like last minute. And it would be cool if we could have if all the teams just provide their graphics early before the season kicked off, and then have those no matter who's recording and no matter what the videographer is, have the same graphics for each team done every week, so it looks standard, professionalized, and it gets updated as the scores come in
What's
appropriately.
up
So
now? Yeah.
what?
Gomez, mute
Oh,
yourself.
sorry. No, but I will. Besides that, I will say, Todd, you're very attentive last year when I did have issues and stuff. So I appreciate that, and I do think the service you're providing is something that we really like. Like we have the ability to record our own games with the AI stuff. We have that camera, but the live stream is really what we're looking for. So when we have alumni come in, they ask all the time because we ask alumni for money to go pay for this, and they're like, we really like being able to see the team play, so really like it. And so
Hey Todd,
hopefully.
if USF records with the VO on the in screen, like anywhere on the field, can they upload that film on the quick cut and get it like synced up so they have multiple views?
Yeah, they can. It's a lot easier to do clips to sync up. But if one camera is running a little bit longer than the other, or plays are longer, that's really hard to sync up one clip.
That's interesting.
He goes one big
That's one
film.
big clip for the whole game. If one clip is longer than the other, because our camera that we shoot with, we pause if there's an injury. It doesn't happen too often, but halftime or whatever. And if you've got a device, it's going to record through all that stuff, and that's really hard to sync the two up.
So
Right.
maybe if you want to do that, Massey, just have to get with the videographer and he lets you know when he stops recording so you can stop recording the video, right? Because the video is AI or could be controlled by your phone, right?
Yeah, so this year we're actually debating because we have the video, but obviously you have to have the subscription to like to get the video to process for you. So this year, if we're still going with Quick Cut, we're debating whether or not we continue paying for the subscription. I think it's valuable. We also use it at practice, but it's also, $1,000 a month or a year. So, if Quick Cut, if we're still doing Quick Cut again, and the it's every year it's getting a little better and a little better, then it may not be worth paying for that for VO.
Just get Jimbo to pay for it. All right, guys. So make sure that we have your graphics. The other thing I need from you guys for Graham is the number of followers you have on your various socials, right? So if you can send me an email with the number of followers you have on Facebook and Twitter or X or Instagram and TikTok and all that type of stuff, we can compile that information and get it to Graham because that's the information he's going to use to go out and try to sell a sponsorship to pay for this whole thing. So give me the, let's make sure we get the graphic that you guys want up on for the scoreboard, and then give me your social media reach, and then I'll pull the ones from the YouTube channel. But if you got any analytics there, Todd, on the back end that you can send me, that'd be great for the YouTube channel. But I know that like when I went and looked just briefly, we had videos with thousands of views, so it should. We'll see how good Graham is getting us some money.
And the more you guys push the YouTube stream, once we hit 1,000 subscribers, you guys start getting money. So it won't be much until we get to the thousands, but I'm making, I don't know, $75 to $100 a month on my YouTube channel. So we need to get to 1,000.
go, gents. Make sure those games get thousands of views. That's good. I didn't even thought about the monetization of the YouTube channel. That's a great point there, God. Anything else, gents? What about getting commentators? That's easy stuff, right? We just need people to organize on the game day.
We always have wireless mics with us. All of our camera operators do, but not everybody wants to announce that they're an injured player. The guys are usually too shy. I don't know if we give them a few beers beforehand, but then maybe we won't like what they say. I don't know.
And then hopefully in the future, you know. So right now, Florida State has got a set of four mics. So like their fourth one, they could potentially put it where the microphone you're hearing what the referee is saying. And we could pipe that into the video, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, gents, make sure you guys start working on your microphone, your radio sets for next year, because it's going to be mandatory for Division One. If everyone gets their set of four, every game day we have eight, so we have more than enough for the refs, the ref, the assistant referees, the two coaches, the videographer, and we have an extra in case something messes up. So, Todd, appreciate your time. Last chance, gents. You got any questions? All right, Todd, we'll be in touch as far as timing and location of the sevens. And then we'll start. You gave me the rough number on the video for this year, so we'll get Graham working on that. And then if not, gents, I will get the rough number of what it is that you guys are expecting. And we'll probably look to probably have boys around October. What do you guys want? October it is. Great. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate your time.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
See ya.
Kirk, sorry, I know you just asked that question, but my kid was yelling at me. What was the last question you just asked?
If we don't get a sponsorship for the quick cut, when do you want them to send invoices?
Oh, I got you. Yeah. October, November is, I guess that works. What was it last year? Was it December?
No, I think he sent them earlier than that. Okay. But I'll make sure it's middle of the fall semester. And since it's only, you know, last year we played an 8-game regular season. That's what the pricing was based off of. This year it's a 7-game regular season. So it should be a little bit less because we have less total games. So
got it. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Cool. So we got that part done. The next thing we got to talk about, gents, is going to be affiliation. So I don't know if you guys have, you know, listened to that podcast with NCR. If you guys have any NCR comments, versus ACR or CRAA. I had a 2.5-hour conversations with CRAA with Paul Keeler and Josh Sutcliffe yesterday morning. So I got some new information that I hadn't had previously. Basically, independent is not really an option. So they say, if that's the route we really want to go, we need to know basically today, because we basically have 2 weeks to fight it, because once new registration cycle hits, that's when all the collection is going to take place. So this year, when you go to let's say that we stay with CRAA, there's a $400 team fee. When you guys go to register your team with USA Rugby, last year it was just the $50 and change registration cost with Rugby Explorer. This time it's going to be a $450 change, right? Because at that time, the CRAA is going to collect the $400 team fee, and they're going to collect the Rugby Explorer fee at the same time. And then when your players go to register, it's a $20 per player registration fee. So supposedly the registration fee was supposed to go up last year. It didn't get in on time, so they didn't push it. So it's $20 per player plus a $400 team fee. For reference, D1A pays $2,500 for their team fee. So open discussion. Shoot.
So just to be clear, the team fee is collected early. That's $400. And then an additional $5 per player over last year's price, correct? So we went up from 15 to 20.
So now when the player goes to register, it's going to be the $35 for the college insurance fee plus the $20 for the $20 for CRAA plus the $35 for USA Rugby, or sorry, for the Florida Rugby Union. So, you know, I think it was 90, was it? $85, $90 last year?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so 95 last year. Yep.
So it might be 100 this year.
Well, okay. I'm a lot happier with the 400 coming up front than coming in the middle of the spring season like it did this past year. And but, I don't see how we could even consider NCR at this point in time is
we don't
for this year anyway.
We don't. If we're talking about it, we're making the moves to basically go independent in preparation of the NCR next year is what I would guess. But
is there any way to, when we get the tabs for paying for all this, for it to be broken out into like what portion of it goes to CRA and what portion of it goes to FRU and all that?
I believe when the player registers, mm-hmm. it is broken out on their end, right? Because they're the ones that are paying.
It does say it, Sean. It'll say like USA club, you know, USA player fee, Florida Rugby Union fee, and then now it'll say CRAA fee.
Yeah. So
right, it's itemized, right?
Yeah. So yeah, it's $100. It's $45 for the USA rugby player fee.
Yeah, I get. So my question really relates. So I know it's itemized, but like, is there any way for it to be split so like the player pays for whatever portion the player is? But like, for example, USF will pay for registrations for our school for each individual player for the overarching body, the governance body, but they won't pay for other portions of it. So I guess my question is, can they split the invoice into pieces? So that we can,
can you seek reimbursement, right? Like if you can get the batch receipt from Sutcliffe mm-hmm. for X amount of players at $20 a player or what, you know,
right.
whatever. I mean, cause if you want, the other option is that you can put a card on, like you could put a card on there with the team. When you go to register, you can actually have the different type of registration instead of having the players all register. You can do a bulk registration.
Yep.
And it goes on to one card. So, if they're willing to put the credit card down and everyone registers against it up to a certain point, you can definitely do that. You know, like, or you can maybe work with Sutcliffe to see if he can give you a receipt for a batch receipt about the guys that you registered and see if you can't get reimbursed for that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cause when I was playing, the school would pay for a portion of the registrations. And so the guys paid less in dues up front. And so we're not charging the guys less in dues this year. But if they could pay the dues and a portion of that, portion of the school funds could pay for it, then we have more money to work with later on the that's not tied to the school. We have more money in our bank basically. So trying to get that figured out.
You're playing the money shell game. You're moving it out of the you're spending the university allocation money as fast as possible so that you have the most amount of cash in the bank.
Exactly. So we can do more things without getting approvals.
Right. Yep. Yeah, because unfortunately we can no longer like invoice the FRU, you know, like that thing we used to do with Evan where we would prepay based on last year's number and then do adjustments. Like that ain't happening anymore. So open discussion. Go ahead. So I don't see us going NCR this year. Like I said, maybe trying to go independent in preparation for going next year, but I will say that CRAA has been responsive about eligibility there. They've already sent me the updated process of what they're doing for eligibility waivers. They have gone onto the USA Rugby website and have changed or is getting with the web developer to make sure that on the USA Rugby website, it doesn't tell you to like email eligibility at usarugby.org. It's going to send you to the job form. They were originally going to use a Google form. They moved to a job form because the job form had like protocols in place that you couldn't actually submit if you didn't have the proper attachments. And so they are listening to what we're saying. As far as the eligibility stuff, and they are fixing that. They are know that we were not happy at all with the timing of that took place last year. What else did we complain to Sutcliffe about? Because they have done most things to listen to us and fix.
Yeah, I agree. I think Sutcliffe's doing a great job for them, but my concern is the part about declaring your intention to go postseason.
Yep.
and the commitments. I mean, when they said fall, there's really nothing going on CRAA fall wise for us, is there? Or does our FCC sevens tournament count?
There is the Fall Classic that they're going to host in South Carolina the first weekend in December. And, Sutcliffe, you know, has saying that our rep team can go play another rep team up there.
And that's a bowl game. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not like us having to when we're competing in the leagues, because you know, and they talked about the fact that if we commit to CRAA sevens, then we cannot play in the CRC.
Yeah, but like, you know,
so my question is, we don't even know what CRAA is going to do, and right now CRC is going to be the better competition.
Yeah, the way I read it was the sevens, right? So like last year, CRAA for D1A didn't even have a sevens tournament, right? They were supposed to do it in June. It never happened. They did do a D1AA one, but it was out in Western Washington. So
with very little notice.
Yeah, right. I mean, all the ACR programs knew. I mean, who the hell want to go out to Western Washington, play a bunch of like, you know.
Right.
So the way I read it.
So you can commit to 15s or sevens, either one.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure there's really nothing we have to commit to by September 15th. Because that's what it said we have to do for fall competition.
Yeah, I mean, our fall competition, we don't have anything in there. So to me, that's more like there's a couple of the D1A programs, D1A conferences that play fall, and they're trying to work, you know, for bowl games for them and stuff. I'm not.
Right. Okay.
The declaration stuff to me was like, basically they wanted to prevent, if you're going to go play in the CRAA Sevens Championship, like you could play at the NCR.
Right.
Or the CRCs. But
vice versa, yeah.
Whatever.
That's fine. So we can make that decision in January. That's my point.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay.
Kirk, could you clear up if they intend to have sanctions for playing NCR teams?
No. I could ask that question directly to them. And so the only thing that might impact is like if they do a power ranking for D1AA, the game won't count towards your power ranking. But like right now, there's the only way they would use power rankings is for like bowl games, seeding for bowl games. If they went to like a bowl game only system for D1AA. But right now they still have like the ACR programs still wanting a championship pathway. And, you know, St. Thomas is declared to want to compete in that as well. So, it might affect your power rankings, but I don't know. That thing is still early and they have not quite fleshed it out just yet. So, whatever. Cause I asked about your game in Knoxville, Ken, and you're fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Where the fuck is that thing? What else you guys got?
So are you saying that the thoughts are they're going to go with the playoff system in the spring, or they still haven't?
ACR wants to continue with their playoff system. I don't know, you know, that 230 minute per weekend rule is going to be, was it 130 minutes per weekend rule?
Yeah.
130 minutes, that is going to be in effect. So any of these weekends that they have these dual match weekends, it's going to be a, you know, it's either two reduced games or it's a 50 minute and an 80 minute game.
So stupid.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what the hell they're going to do.
I mean, so is the likely event just going to be they're probably going to just hold on to the bowl situation for this year?
They're doing both, right? Like they're doing bowl games for us.
Yeah.
And they're going to us and whomever, and they're doing the championship pathway for ACR. But like whatever. So I mean like,
and we're totally untethered from ACR, right? Or not, I mean, I know we're not ACR, but we're totally untethered from that whole playoff system. Whatever, the bowl games is our end of year competition, right?
That's, I mean, if you guys wanted to go for it, declare for it, well, let me just go for it. I mean, I don't know when it starts. You know, like we have our state championship weekend. Like, I don't really intend to change the schedule. I think right now the schedule is just being waited on. The last thing we're waiting for is the referees to sign off on it. You know, like I believe that what was holding us up before was the men's schedule, but that's been completed. Now it's just the refs to sign off. but we have our state championship date. You know, we plan our state final to take place there. We plan for the play-in game to happen there as well. So I mean, we still have all that, and then I don't know when those playoff dates are going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like playoffs the way D1A does playoffs. It's 3 weeks in a row, and you travel across the nation. It's hard, it's fast, and it's expensive, and yep. It doesn't take up all the regular season. You know, the way the ACR happens, it's over the course of like 5+ weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Before any bye time, before like you go off to travel, you know, like it could eat up 6 weeks of season, regular season time frame. Whereas what we have here eats up one weekend. So,
is the ACR like the same way that it used to be with USA Rugby, where it's like regional, like you win your state and you win your region and you win? Is that how they do it?
You know who's the like head of ACR?
Who's that?
Rich Cortez. You know who Rich Cortez was?
That name sounds familiar.
He was a collegiate commissioner of USA Rugby during the bankruptcy. So it's like the same shit.
Yeah, Massey, it's literally the exact same thing, but everyone that we played before is fucking gone to NCR. Like, it's the exact same thing, but it's more of just a circle jerk of four teams in four conferences.
Well, who doesn't like a good one of those, you know?
I mean, so, you know, they want to encourage out-of-conference play, you know, which, you know, you can do that with tours. They want to encourage. Yeah. So I've asked for, can we get something to help us with out of conference play? You know, can there be a billboard, postboard, I don't know, like a fucking Tinder for rugby matches, you know, like what date, what area, you know, try to figure out something, who wants to travel and who can host, that type of situation. Right. Because what do we really need in Florida? We need opponent for our rep team, which we now have at the Fall Classic. We have a quality regular season, right? It's a 7-game +2 to win, right? It's a 9-game regular season to win. If you look at some of the NCR programs, you know, they really only have September, October, and half of November to play, or maybe the first week in November to play before NCR weekends playoff start. So they have like 9 weeks of regular season. So yeah, like
no the SCR, those 12 games in.
No way. Yeah, right. That was the one thing I did not like about what Pat said. I thought he was I wish I'd done more research. You know, like since then, I went and looked at all the NCR conference schedules, and like the SCRC, you know, they have a 9-team Division I. They have a regular season of 2 games. They have 3 pools of 3. You play your pool once, and then it's into the playoffs. And they have a 6-team playoff structure, so you could win as little as 4 games and win the conference. So, I think what we have here structure wise, as far as, you know, 7 for the regular season +2, you know, 9 to win. And the reason we went with 7 is so that we have some space for other teams to come in. So if we can get out of conference teams either come down, or we go on tours, or we're able to supplement some of these, you know, some of these experiences for the players, I think we're sitting pretty good as far as what we need experience wise. What we need now is paid coaches. You know, we need alumni associations built up, and we need coaches being paid, because we can't, you know, we can't be afforded losing coaches anymore. So to me, we get what we really need out of CRAA. You know, I finally got to see finances. I feel happy about the finances that we're paying into. I feel like we're getting plenty of value, and they're adding more. They are listening to what we're saying. So to me, like, you go NCR, the schedule is going to be really redacted, and we're playing, you know, we're trying to train every day when there's thunderstorms still. And, you know, who knows when a hurricane comes. And I don't know if you guys remember a couple of years back when like a hurricane hit Jacksonville and they were, you know, school shut down for 2 weeks. Like, what happens then, you know? So.
So in the end of story here we're sort of leaning on like, independent sort of out, NCR's out, unless we really talked about it and did it next year or the year after. CRA is where we're going this year, unless somebody has a different opinion or opposition on it.
Yeah, to me, like, there is some weird, archaic thing about the College Club Council. Anyways, they basically made the claim that there is no way to be independent. There's no way to avoid the CRAA team via player fee. I'm not sure. You can maybe try to fight it. It'll be a hell of a fight. I'm not sure what we're really gaining out of it, you know, because we are getting stuff out of CRA that is helpful for us. You know, like it is a postseason, it's a one-off, you know, like I understand that the players don't appreciate it right now. Like they don't see the value in it. You know, because like, we can see the results that we haven't had the greatest results in these bowl games, except for St. Thomas beating a D1A team. Thank you very much for doing that. You guys are a varsity program. You guys are kicking ass. Love it. Keep it up. The rest of the club programs, you know, it's different. So like maybe the guys don't know what it means, or like they're not being sold it properly, whatever, you know. I think personally think national playoffs are a crutch for retention that clubs and coaches use. I think if we are building these like good experiences, we have a really tight, hard to win local conference that is supplemented by some really good fun travels to places like, I don't know, Tuscaloosa, Knoxville, you know, if we're getting in some really cool folks that come down to Miami. I think we have what we need as far as the schedule to be building. And what we really need to be doing is actually building. Like we need to be building our alumni associations, getting money into the programs, subsidized, you know, like we need to have paid coaches. We need to have paid administrators. You know, we need to have presidents that are the face of the club to the university, but you know, they're going to be cycling through. We know how that's going to be. We need some back end folks, you know, like we need to stop subsidizing everything for rugby. You know, like we need people not giving up their day job time to do rugby work. We need to be paying folks for their rugby time. Diego, go.
So just a quick question. When we're talking about experiences, trying to build good experiences for these guys so that maybe then they understand the value of trying to make sure you do everything you can to get to those bowl games and different stuff. Where are we with the select side for the Fall Classic, possibly, if that's a possibility for these guys?
Yeah, I mean, we decide to go with CRAA. They confirm our opponent. We'll figure out a program to how we go about selections and who's going to be the coach and who's going to run it and all that type of stuff.
Sounds good. I think that's an easy way to make everybody start really competing in the state, because not only do they want to win states, but they also want to make the select side and represent Florida.
Yeah, I mean, the select side I think is a really important tool because it helps. I really think it helps with camaraderie. You know, like everyone just sees everyone on the opposition side of the field, and now you get to play with them on the same side of the field. You know, you get to see them as not just opponents but as people. So I think it helps with some of the interactions amongst the clubs, and I also think, yeah, it's another opportunity. It's another good experience. You know, get our better players more opportunity to play higher level, which doesn't happen all that much. But
what date is the Fall Classic again?
I think it's gonna be the first weekend in December.
Second weekend, because I think the first is a Saturday, so it's like December 8th or something like that.
Let me look.
December 8th. Okay. So make sure I have the date so I can.
Fall Classic is December 7th and 8th in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Spartanburg.
Okay. Well, Hinton only wrote it plural, but yeah, Spartanburg, Spartansburg, whatever it is.
Okay. And is there if you know we go CRA and we decide to do, obviously there's things, kinks to be worked out, but we talking about bringing like a team of 25 guys, 30 guys, like what's the team size? What's kind of like the ideal?
I would guess 28. It depends if we're just playing one game. If we play one game, it's probably 24. You know, just because okay. you put players in groups of eight or groups of four for a hotel room. So I would guess it'd be 24 or 28, depending on the number of matches and then the staff.
Okay. And then opponent for that is to be determined.
I think it's one of the, it might be like, Texas or Heart of America. It'll be one of the other conferences.
Okay.
D1AA conferences.
All right. Perfect.
Yeah. So, I mean,
sorry, Kirk. So are they saying that they're going to send another select side from another conference? Or Josh Sutcliffe is just going to invite teams and see who takes the bait and travels to South Carolina?
I think he said that there is another conference who's looking for an opponent for the rep team, all-star team program as well. I believe he already has someone tentatively scheduled for us. I'll follow up, but yeah, my understanding is going to be another rep team, another D1AA conference. Whatever program they're using, my preference is a rep team, so that way we get cross-sectional representation throughout the entire conference.
And were we also still good to send individual teams there as well?
My understanding, yeah. If you want to, if somebody wants to go and play a bowl game, reach out to Sutcliffe, and put your interest in, express your interest.
We'll be going as a team.
Yeah. So,
and is this going to be consistent year to year, location wise, date wise, expectation wise? Like, can we plan for this in the future?
Yeah. I
Without
would
finding
think,
out, you know, in July.
I would guess so, because the Fall Classic is their solution for their East Coast based Division One A programs that, play the regular season. So I believe so. I can double check and find out if this is supposed to be ongoing, if this is like a yearly event at this time frame.
So, okay, so that just I didn't realize we could just take the team as well. So if we just say Sutcliffe, USF wants to go up and play, automatically we're gonna find an op we automatically he will find us an opponent, or is it like, is there some kind of weird selection?
I think it will depend on interest of teams, right?
Okay.
If they have a saturation of teams, then he'll probably have to go with some sort of selection process. If he
Yep.
has a dearth of interest, then he'll take what he can get. I mean, that's how I would guess it's happening, but.
Okay. Yeah. The reason I'm asking is we talked yesterday and I told you the issue with Alabama, and we are trying to still find an out of conference opponent. It could still be Alabama, but we're getting close to the end of the line here. And if that is an option and he can guarantee something, that might be a good option for us.
Well, reach out to them.
Okay.
Tell them
Cool.
what you want. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
I don't believe the championship weekend has been settled yet for D1AA. I'm not even sure it's been settled for D1A yet as far as what the weekend is. The last I heard, they were trying to figure out how they were going to do their sevens championship in relation to their 15s championship. If, they might try to do their championship weekend on the last weekend of April in direct conflict with the CRC. I'm not sure. I will find out, but I'm pretty certain that the championship weekend for CRAA is still up in there in the air, because the last I heard it was in the air and I haven't heard anything since then. Anyways, you guys, any other discussion points you want to go over? Points you want to make? Are we good to decide?
I don't think there's too much to decide, Kirk.
So, stick with CRAA. If you have any opposition, let me know. If not, I think everyone's in agreement that there's no great solution in CRAA right now is kind of the best solution, right? I do think no matter which way we end up going, there's never going to be a perfect solution. There's always going to be drawbacks of somewhere. If we go NCR in the fall, there's that has its obvious drawbacks. We went independent, that had its obvious drawbacks. It gives us maximum flexibility, but that comes with the least amount of coordination with other conferences was what you need for postseason. And then we go to CRAA, it has its own drawbacks. So one of the drawbacks so he did say that the championship weekend is the first weekend in May, location to be finalized. I just asked Sutcliffe right now. So sounds like that's what's happening. So, you know, our championship weekend is a couple mid-April, so you still have a chance to go play in the CRC if you don't participate in the in CRAA Sevens championship. But then you might have to, you know, switch back to 15s real quick if you happen to go to the bowl game. We'll go over real quick here. Okapi has reached out to me about potentially starting a U23 program. They're quite serious about it. You know, FIU is not going to participate next year, right, Emilio? Has anything changed?
That's correct.
So, yeah, so Okapi has reached out about potentially wanting to play U23. He also asked, you know, he asked, what are the requirements to play not just in Florida Division II, but to be advanced to Division I and then to qualify for a postseason? And so I've asked the question to CRAA, what's going to happen? And it wasn't as straightforward as I thought it was going to be. Seems to me, I'm not sure how it's going to go. I have requested for a meeting with everyone. Don't have it yet, but internally, gents, what's our feelings as far as a U23 programs goes? I'm gonna put up some hypotheticals, right? If Okapi U23 comes in this year and wins the Division Two, are they allowed to compete in the play-in for Division One? I'll tell you my opinion. Like, if any program is joining into a conference, they need to be able to win the championship, right? Like, I'll give you an example. When Life University wanted to put their B side into the CERC, the CERC made the thing where, you know, it was in the north, so it was all the Georgia and Tennessee teams, so it really didn't affect the Florida teams at all. But they didn't want Life B side to be able to compete for a championship, and I think that's ridiculous, right? To me, if you want to build a conference, you need to, you know, make it, you know, keep it simple. So if the team is going to join in and they're not able to compete for a championship, to me, all those games are friendlies and they mean nothing. So if you're going to try to build a conf or try to build a competition, you need to make it again where it's tight, it's tough to win, lots of parity. And I think Okapi U23, I think, would be a good fit to our Division Two. But you know, what happens if they win? Are they allowed to play into Division One? They've asked some questions like, what if all their players are full-time students, but like at Miami-Dade Community College or Broward Community College or some other schools that don't have rugby programs, are they allowed? Would we accept them as collegiate, like as a collegiate program?
Don't all those schools have consortium agreements with FIU? So theoretically, Okapi could just use this opportunity of FIU not competing and just take up their flag and run with it.
I don't know how you would do that. Like, to me, I like maybe, but now you're trying to navigate all these like university bureaucracies.
I'm just saying, if these kids are eligible, would be eligible through FIU, then what's the difference?
He doesn't have a program this year.
I'm making the case. I'm making the case for them, for Okapi.
I'm pretty sure last time I checked that the administration didn't want the like MDC students to play for FIU. And so
So
I don't know if,
they're rejecting the consortium agreement.
yeah.
Consortium agreement means like, yeah, other programs can play on your program. Other universities can play on your university program. So
Yeah,
you're
last
saying that
time.
the university doesn't want it anymore.
Yeah. Well, they were. I mean, I could talk to them again, but like I remember, like last time we spoke about it, like they were against it.
Is that the campus recreation department
Yeah.
or what? Like consortium agreements are like some weird quasi highly bureaucratic thing that I'm not even sure which departments are the ones that sign off on it. I don't know if it's campus recreation, if it's like university administration, like the president's office, or if it's like the red. I don't even know how they go about consortium agreements. So I don't even know where to navigate, where to go to begin navigating that.
I think the other question we ask is what were going to be your eligibility or the eligibility requirements for D2? I believe they were going to be a lot looser, right?
Depends what we want to do. You know, like actually technically go and CRAA. There's I don't think there's any difference between D1 and D2 eligibility. It's all the same. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question because I know that technically they want to do like these different categories as far as the clubs go, where like division, you know, D1A is performance, D1 double A is development, and D2 is participation. So like they might really relax the eligibility standards. You know, this handbook they sent out is the D1 double A D2, and I don't think it said anything in there about a differentiation of eligibility for division two. But yes, for me, like I to me, Division two, I think would be for programs that aspire to be Division one, they should be, you know, following Division one standards. But for those that, you know, are unable to do so and need assistance, like I'm in favor of relaxing the standards, but just to make sure that the games happen. But that's my personal stance, and I'm open for feedback.
Get those D2 teams for eventually. Should call this like put building.
I
I
cannot.
gotta have full time. You know, UNF's good spending. If there is the U23 team has got at a bare minimum that same full time like, that can be, you know, bare.
Breaking up big time, Ed. But I think you're trying to say equal standards across the board.
Yeah, I'm on the highway, so sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah, no worries.
How does this impact, like, okay, say they come in, they win D2, and then they get bumped to D1. If they go to D1, how does that impact postseason or CRAA? Like, does it impact that? Do they get a chance to go to those things, playoffs, bowls, sevens? Because
Yeah.
they're, I don't know how that works if it's a collegiate conference.
So yeah, my understanding is we can have kind of one standard, you know, and then but as far as like qualifying for postseason nationally, you know, CRAA is gonna like try to provide a standard. You know, this is why Sutcliffe is like, you know, I think this is something new. When you know he wants to put together some guidelines provisionally type stuff, but I don't know. Like to me, the Okapi is asking questions about what's it gonna be looking like long term. I think those are kind of tough questions. I don't know if those questions can be asked right now. What I asked them, CRAA's response was like, they told me what they told me. I was like, what are we talking about? Like this sounds to me like overly bureaucratic, which is, I don't know. So it sounds like I'm just posing the question, like, what do we want to do here internally? Because I get, you know, my understanding is that we can have a bit of a different stance internally than what happens nationally. Now, what Okapi does, you know, they're probably going to want to know what the national standards are, but we don't control those.
I think internally we should. I think if we're talking about growing, like making sure that we're keeping players, when it comes to guys that leave and go to different, especially in South Florida, you see it a lot, where guys leave high school, they stop playing high school rugby, and then they almost have nowhere to play, or they don't go to a bigger university, they go to a smaller place, and now the consortiums are kind of out the window. But I think if they were to live by the standard of they've got to turn in transcripts to somebody. They've got to maintain the GPA that anybody would have to maintain. They would have to be full-time students at a university or a college. I don't see an issue as long as they fall within the guidelines and they follow the same rules, and then we're not losing rugby players that we would lose.
I don't think we can force them to be all students, because if they're putting a U23 together, it's not just going to be a U23 of guys
Well,
at community college, right? It's going to be guys who just are under 23 who want to play rugby. If
that
they're
was kind of
doing.
my that was my interpretation of what it was going to be. It's just like U23 is kind of like a Wild West type situation. But Okapi was saying, you know, what if we make, you know, what if the standards we hold these guys to is that they are college students?
Yeah,
So
that's what I.
want to do.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
But I mean, what about if someone's like in a trade school, you know, is working X amount of hours, is in a trade school, is he eligible?
Yeah, just I was speaking with Mariano quite a lot about this the last month or so, and his intention is to make sure that it's done properly and everyone gets their, you know, like a regular eligibility. It's just a case of saying, okay, what's the eligibility for the school that you're at? Meaning Broward College, Miami-Dade, Kaiser, whatever that school is, and then each kid kind of checks off the boxes so that they don't have any resistance, let's say, from us as FCC or potentially even on the national level. He just doesn't want to, he just want to lose those kids. He even pushed for the lot a lot of the kids that didn't go to a college. He's one of the reasons why they pushed it to become an under-19s league. So those kids that were first year college but didn't go to college, like they graduated high school, they could still continue playing for a year to give them that little bit of cushion before they had to go to the men's team, you know, because they didn't go to college. So he's just about it's just about retaining the kids, but he's quite keen on making it sit in the, you know, all of the eligibility rules, so we don't sort of yeah, basically just to keep it smooth and, you know, don't make it a shit show once
So I think
they, yeah.
from like a technicality standpoint, in order to be collegiate, it's one college, and the college signs off on the sport club to play on their behalf. Like that's kind of like the technicality of it. And what U23 is something that's like completely different because we're asking for a program outside of university to field like a developmentally appropriate, similar age grade, similar sized team. And what Mariano wants to, you know, appears that what he wants to do is like follow the same like college eligibility standards where like basically, you know, they will have, instead of having one eligibility roster from one university, they'll have three or four, right? They could have Miami-Dade, Broward, Kaiser, any other school that the kids go to, and they'll have just multiple of them, right? The question then becomes what, you know, our standard of what we're willing to accept is one level. And then, like, what CRAA or like other, you know, this is when you start doing stuff nationally, you start losing control. You know, you don't have total control over it. You have to kind of, you know, what CRAA is going to require, or what other, you know, like, I don't know yet. So.
Well, is there enough support for a U23 movement so then we have the normal collegiate stuff and then you have your own 23 instead of trying to squeeze them in as a that's it's like a slippery slope to a lot of weird things, man. Like an all-star team, people from different places, transient players, or you know, they're only going to be there for a year. That's a weird thing. Can we get some support for U23 league to run side by side with a college?
You're spot on, Matt, in terms of that, right? Like why would a U23 team want to put themselves in a box when they have more freedom? I 100% am okay with U23 teams in our D2, like Daytona U23, Jax U23, stuff like that, as a way of retaining players, as a way of growing. But like, you know, if you I don't think there's value for them to try and transform themselves into a college when they're not.
You're just saying it's like just two different things. Like it's not a collegiate sport club. It's this other entity.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, like I'm not, yeah, would there be a chance to support a U23 entire league? Sure. You know, like in my 6 years in this commissioner position and prior to that, I've been talking about U23s. Finally, somebody's willing to step up. And like once there's enough of them, sure, they can have their own league. But like right now, there isn't. So what do we do?
It's happening the same thing on the men's teams where D2 teams are trying to enter D3 teams and they're so focused on can these D3 teams make the playoffs? And the conversation had was basically like, hey, you few that are doing this will need to make the sacrifice to show that there's value in this so that everyone gets on board so that then we can talk playoffs. But when you're the one entity, like I don't, you know, I again, I don't see the value in them conforming to the standards that we might have to, you know.
I mean, there's some like policies in place. There's some policies that we could be looking and putting in place to prevent some of the like AAUization of a U23 program, like some just all-star, you know, like what's stopping Miami Sharks from just putting together a U23 program and it putting it in slaughtering and like bringing in all these international kids that they want to put in a pipeline to their program, right? Like those are some of the issues that you could potentially be seeing or whatever. Like you could put a rule in place that like you have to play for your most local club, you know, like, or if your university, like you, Okapi U23 starts up, there's no FIU, there's a couple FIU pro kids on the program. Like what happens when FIU starts back up? Like can, are we, like, is it up to the player to be able to decide which program they want to go to? Or we want to have a policy in place that if you're a student at a university and that university has a rugby program, you must go play for them to prevent the all-star, the cannibalization of other programs. Like there's some other policies that we could be looking at in that type of situation.
Yeah, no, I dig all that. So I think specific answer is to let them play D2, but I don't think it's as clean as if they win, they get a shot at D1. I think there'd be other stuff involved.
Okay. What is that other stuff we think?
Some of the stuff that you just said.
Oh, like the you can't like, just like the policies to like preventing all stars in as U23 programs.
It is a whole another meeting trying to make U23. That's a whole another thing. I
Right.
mean,
Yeah. I really I just want to get the feedback so I can provide it to Mariano. I mean, Gavin, you
okay.
can provide it and let me know what you guys think because right now. In the South Florida side, you know, we've got Millennium Atlantic, University of Miami, Ave Maria. You know, it's kind of three. You know, St. Thomas's Express putting their B side in. Maybe that could be the fourth one. You know, in the north, we have Eckerd, Daytona, Embry-Riddle, whatever happens there, UNF, and then Florida State's, you know, Express to put their B side in. You know, I'm pretty confident Florida State can put it in. A B side because they routinely can dress three teams, but they struggle finding opposition. So yeah, I mean, we got four up north. We need a fourth one in the south, so we have like a eight team competition, and we can have some good competition down here. My concern is if we put these rules in, like to me, it's almost like where Mariano wants to get to is completely unknown. And if we're going to start putting these policies in place like now, they're not going to go. You know, like, can we like cross that bridge when we get there? Or are we going to like put these policies in place and like maybe prevent them from even starting up?
So that's where I think it's kind of like what the adults told the D2 teams entering D3 teams, where it was like, hey, do it, show us you can do it, right? Because it's uncharted territory. Show us you can routinely dress 23 through a schedule of 7 matches, right? And then we'll talk. But we can't promise them that they can go on to national playoffs. Like we can't make that promise. We don't know.
Yeah. All right. Gavin, do you want to talk to Mariano? You want me to call him? What do you want to do?
Well, I'll maybe good to get it from you. For me, it's like I'm just talking with my old mate. You know what I mean? So from you, it comes a bit more official. But I can I'm happy to speak with him as well and sort of give him that other perspective as well.
Right. So the general consensus here is very comfortable them participating in Division Two in any format they want, or we're gonna put guidelines on it.
Now let them just be U23. Make sure they're
All
under
right.
23.
So completely comfortable letting them play in Division Two with no restrictions other than U23. Mariano might want no more information, but that's his restrictions he's putting on himself. We're not the ones putting him on there. But
I'd
as far
like
as
to hear
moving him.
from before we completely move forward, like because I think Ed brought up kind of the same a valid point where he said, if my guys have to be full-time students, then so do theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can't pull from the local community college, JU, but I'm not allowed to train
Yeah.
other fields for liability. So it's not going
Yeah.
to be, you know, it's not an average comparison. I can't pull whatever trades. well, guys here, you know, for a year, a day, or whatever, I can pull them there and have them train at UNF. Like, so,
yeah.
My counter to that would be that everybody wants to play for their university team, but these guys that are going to community college, they don't have a university team to play for. And so, like, it is going to always be much more difficult to recruit to a U23 team than it will be to recruit to a college team. Like, does anyone here think it'd be easier to recruit to a U23 team than to a college team? Let me put it that way.
So I think that's dependent on resources, right? Like, if you tell me that I have a field, if I have a field with the city, part, you know, city parks and rec, then no, it's 1,000 times easier to recruit U23 than it is for college. But if you tell me my feet, no, Kirk, man, I ran a U23 team in 2021.
Sure. Like, because everyone was forced to because of COVID.
Right. And I'm telling you that it was easier to recruit when I did that than when I have a limited pool at Florida State, when I have campus rec breathing down my neck saying, if they're not a student, they're not touching this field.
Anybody else believe that? Amelia, do you think it'd be easier to operate as a FIU rugby, or like from a recruitment standpoint, is it easier to recruit as a U23 or easier to recruit as FIU?
I think it's easier to recruit for FIU because, you know, we have, I guess, more, you know, more people to take from versus just off the street. But I mean, it could go either way.
Yeah. I mean, again, like if U23s are so easy, they would have already been proliferated. You know, like they'd be all over the place right now. They're not. So like, I just don't think that, maybe further down the road, maybe we'll see it, but I don't see it at the moment.
I think people need to see the value in it. That's not to say that it's not easy or that it's not manageable. But just because it hasn't happened, and it's because people don't see value in it, not because it's hard. You know, I get floods every year of, oh, can I play? I go to TCC. And it's like, no, like, you can't. Sorry.
Yeah, man, I gotta agree with that one, man. The eligibility standards limit the amount of players that we can have. That speaks to it. Would there may be nuance in the way that you recruit, but recruiting for U23, it expanding a club with U23 standards would be easier than with collegiate standards.
Yeah, it's the difference between recruiting at the gym and at Publix versus recruiting at the Union Market Fair.
Yeah, I just think that out on a college campus, you have a very like highly, you already have a crowd that's like already looking for stuff to do, and they already have an identity with the university. Whereas you're asking this person to take on an identity as a city or place under 23, like, I think that's always going to be a more difficult sell. Just because, like, it's such a strange identity that most people are not used, like, aware of or used to or any of that type of stuff. So.
But are you saying it would be harder to have a U23 in a place that has the university established, or we're in a brand new area? What's going to be harder, the U23 or the university?
I mean, I think from a starting a rugby program, it's always going to be easier to start a rugby program at a university because you're automatically, like, they have fields, right? Like, yeah, you have to deal with the sport club office, but you don't have to deal with fucking Parks and Rec, right? And like Parks and Rec, if you don't have a good relationship with them, is a motherfucker. Even for youth programs.
This is probably what's going to happen with Okapi, right? So obviously I pull a lot of kids from Okapi into St. Thomas because I built Okapi over those 10 years or so. But there's a set of kids that don't go to a university, right? Some of them go to UF. There's a couple of guys, I know, like Benito's up at UF, and I've got a couple of guys. I've got guys from Okapi all over the state and elsewhere. But there's always like, say, I don't know, 30% of them that just don't go anywhere. They go to Broward College and then they stop playing. And that's what he's trying to prevent. So we always graduate out, say, somewhere between 10 and 15 kids. So he's always going to get a handful. And then the ones that graduated the year before and the year before that, they're all going to come back. They'll be like, oh, yeah, I haven't played in a while. Let's get back into it because there's no college team for me to play for. So he's always going to have a little core there that don't go elsewhere. if you guys are happy to make it open to under 23 regardless, that makes it even easier for him because there's a lot of the kids that just go get a job. They'll make a Ocapio make a team, and then they'll pull a kid from Key Biscayne that has no, you know, didn't go to college, and they'll pull a couple of kids from Boca because there's good relationships through Jaguares and all of that. So I wouldn't doubt that the team would happen because they have the field space. It's been established for many years now. The city loves us. I don't see it as a major issue. My thoughts, genuinely, I think if they do that first year in D2 and we allow it to sort of be pretty free, but make sure maybe say to them with the future to be taken seriously, we have to put the eligibility rules in if you move up to D1AA, for example.
Yeah, that's not the conversation I had with Mariano yesterday. He wanted to know what the standards were to be up front. That's why I'm having this conversation in this structure today. But yeah, I'm with you. And I think the stat, you know, like I looked at the stat for Miami because Charlie had asked me because he was talking about trying to talk to the Tridents about doing it. 50% of kids, high school graduates in like Miami-Dade County, don't go on to a university, or they go to a community college or don't go to university at all. And I'm pretty sure the stat for Broward is probably a little bit higher, you know, like probably more go to college. But it's, you know, there's a huge percentage of kids that don't, or go to, you know, or don't, that don't go to university or just go to community college or whatever. So yeah, those are the kids that I think we should be trying to, we as college conference can be doing our part for the greater rugby ecosystem to help capture those kids. But
exactly.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Same page. Last thing I got, guys, gents, is the sevens. You got it, Gerardo. You're with UM. You're the coach at UM. They called me the one time. Great.
Yeah.
Definitely. Send me your email address if you don't mind in the chat here.
I did.
Oh, sorry. Thanks. I wasn't paying attention. Sevens tournaments. So Matt Guest is organizing a, right now it's just FAU and Miami have agreed to play a warm-up tournament on the 9th, right? November 9th. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
Down at Miami. Down in Coral Gables, right?
Yes.
So anybody that wants to go to a warm-up tournament, it's going to be down there. Get a couple programs there. I'll make sure you guys – make sure you communicate to the referees, and then I'll make sure it helps gets paid for. And then the championship tournament, we agreed to keep it on the 23rd, right? The weekend before Thanksgiving, and not move it up a week earlier to align with All Florida Day, which will take place November 16th, right? This is something we discussed at the first meeting. I vaguely remember it. I just want to refresh my memory.
That's what I had in my notes.
Beautiful. All right, so it is going to be on the 23rd. So we are looking for a host in the central part of the state, UCF, USF, or Eckerd. Maybe they're not on the phone call, but if either one of you guys want to host it on the 23rd, put your hand up. Other than that, anything else, gents?
If anybody's interested, I'm pulling in a few out-of-state teams to come to Tallahassee October 12th. Feel free to reach out to me if you want to pick up some friendlies in Tallahassee with unique opponents.
What weekend again?
October 12th.
October 12th. Okay.
So,
sorry, go ahead, Ken.
What's the weekend of the All Florida Day?
All Florida Day is. Yep.
Sorry.
16th. So you're your requested warm-up tournament on the 17th. So Ken has volunteered to host a warm-up tournament on Sunday, 17th, in Gainesville. May or may not have referees for it because they will likely push back against it because All Florida Day is the day before, probably somewhere in the area.
Although I got three or four local refs that I could probably use.
Right. Last year, you guys, like the coaches, had to run it, right?
Now we how did we do it? I don't know how we did it last year. We may have had some coaches ref.
Yeah. So another opportunity up there for a warm-up tournament for as far as get some games in for sevens-wise the weekend before the championship, which will be, again, on the 23rd. Don't forget, gents, please send me your stats on your social medias. Massey, what you got? I hear your son in the background.
Yeah, it was my daughter running around being crazy. Right. No, I was just Gomez said he's had a few teams. I'm just curious which teams, but I can always get with him offline too. If it doesn't matter right now.
Dale's pitch, Gomez. Nope, guess not. Anything else?
I'm sorry. You said the 20
Georgia team.
Got it.
Gerardo, the 23rd will be the
sevens,
November. So we do our sevens in November. Gomez, are you guys going to participate in the sevens this year? So I'm guessing what we're going to do is the division, the championship, the sevens championship will be capped at 8 teams. So obviously division one teams, you have the first bite at it. If you don't want to participate, let me know. That'll then make potentially 3 openings. As long as 3 other teams put their hand up for it, we'll have a team of 8 or a group of 8. If 3 people don't, we'll probably have to do a group of 6. If Florida State doesn't play in sevens like they did not do last year. Do you know if you're going to do it or not, Mike?
Not to be Johnny on the spot here, but no. If you give me a location, I'd be more inclined, but no.
Central Florida, Orlando, Tampa, St. Pete.
Yeah, St. Pete's, you know, almost an hour and a half farther than UCF. But, you know, no, I don't. My chickens haven't hatched yet, so I don't know. You know, I might have 14 guys say, holy shit, we got to do sevens, and we'll pay for it ourselves. If that happens, then yes.
So you're undecided?
Yeah, undecided, you know, but you know me, I always personally lean to no.
All right. Well, if 3 Division II teams want to put their hand up, they might beat you out.
I would be so happy for them.
Great. Cool. So any of you guys in Division II that want to play in the Sevens Championship, put your hand up. Take you. If only 2 or 1, we're going with 6.
Kirk, can I hold off on that and then, like, let you know in the future, just depending on, like, how things go?
Is there a chance you guys might start up?
But yeah, possibly. Like, so regarding like the future with the club, like, we were thinking about just right now just doing a bunch of friendlies and sort of building back up with just with players and stuff, and then eventually, by next year, getting back into it.
Emilio, I've got a question for you. How are you going to play friendlies when every team around you is going to be scheduled in the spring?
I know, but like in the sense of like sort of like scrimmages, not necessarily like.
Right. Who's going to have bodies and time to give you when they're in the middle of their season?
Relax. Yeah. I mean, he's got a valid point there. Emilio, if you want to talk, we can chat more about strategy as far as the last thing I want to see is FIU go away. You know, you guys have been a staple of the conference for as long as I remember. So it's unfortunate to see you guys in the position you're at. Let's chat more after this about what you want to do. But yeah, I can hold the, I mean, if you guys go and Okapi goes, we'll do whatever we can with what we got. We'll make sure everyone gets sorted out. Okay. My preference is that, I don't know, we'll see. Let's chat some more offline. We won't hold everyone on here. Please be sure to send me your statistics on your social medias for the Division I teams. Division II, if you guys want video on your games, you know, email with Todd. Let's see if we can might be able to tack on a couple more games. You might have to pay, you know, at home or whatever. So if you want to do it, you guys, if you don't have his email, let me know. I'll give it to you. But, you know, he's got the streaming service. He's got all the stuff. Last chance. Anything else? I'm going to take this down and put it up on the podcast channel so you guys can listen to it later. For the guys that showed up late, you can go back and listen to the whole thing again. Appreciate your time, gents. That ends our summer series. If anything comes up, I'll let you guys know. I will schedule a training with Pat to go over Quick Cut about how we use that. Anything else you guys want me to talk about or schedule or anything? Great. Just to let you guys, everyone know, you know, my position with the as the VP of College Men is, you know, we have the AGM coming up in September. Please make sure everyone comes up to that. Rick, where is it at? And the date again? I know it's November 6th and 7th. 7th and 8th? 7th and 8th. Vero Beach at Dodgertown. So they're going to have the summit on September 7th. There's going to be a couple of tracks. There'll be a coaching track. There'll be Rick, do you want to just jump on and give the spiel about it? A coach track, a referee track, an admin track. And there'll be, so if you've never been to one of these summits, I think they're great. You basically get the agenda. You can pick and choose what you want to go to. There's probably three or four conversation, you know, like presentations per track. Is that right, Rick? So, or Gomez, you know, the deets. So, highly recommend to go to the summit. It should be really positive for everyone. The agenda has not been set yet, but should be some good information out there. It's also good to, like, you know, all, you know, get to know, put some faces to people's names and that type of stuff. And then the AGM, the annual general meeting, takes place the next day. So I think it's one or two people per club is allowed to go. This is where we vote. You know, this is where two people per club are allowed to go. This is where, like, Avery Riddle is going to come and say, we want to apply for a membership. Okapi is going to come and say, we want to apply for membership. FIU doesn't have to come and apply for membership because they're already a member. But if they take a year off, they might have to come and apply the following year for membership. This is where they'll present the budget. This is where you get to yell at the president. This is where the president is going to be potentially up for election if he votes, if he runs and there is a opponent against him. Then there'll be elections for board positions. So that all takes place in September. My position is up next September, and I don't plan to run again. So this will likely be my last year as the conference commissioner, unless something drastically changes. If there's like seven paid coaches by next September, maybe I'll stick around. But I want to see growth happen. I want to see growth happen. I want to see the sport, you know, like, we can't be subsidizing rugby. We got to be paying for it. I will record a podcast with all my viewpoints and this and that. It takes a while to understand. You know, it's nuanced. It's annoying. But I'll try to put all that information in the podcast because it is a written, or sorry, it is an oral history. You know, you guys can go back and listen to all the various changes that we've done in the last, like, kind of 3 years. I tried to capture some of the other stuff before that. So, yeah, just want to put that out there now, let everyone know. But yeah, that'll be the end of our meeting. You guys enjoy the rest of your time off. Season's going to be cranking up here shortly. Good luck in Ireland, Gomez. Anybody else got any trips coming up this fall?
Chapel Hill.
We'll be going to Arkansas. We'll be going Utah. We're looking to schedule with Arkansas State. We're just trying to find a location. I think we might hit you up, Gomez.
You know, Matt Guest played at Arkansas State. He might have some contacts for you.
Yeah, we've been talking with their coach this week, and then we're going to play the Bahamas in Freeport on November 9th.
Nice.
Florida's playing Sam Houston, a rematch in New Orleans, and then we're going up to Tennessee also the weekend of the Florida-Tennessee game.
Lovely. Love to hear that. Up in Knoxville?
Yeah.
You guys pay for hotel rooms, or what's happening?
Yeah, well, actually, the team, they've offered to put us up. The players
at the houses? Up. We're going back to the 2000s here?
We're playing them on Friday night before the Florida-Tennessee game.
That's cool. Hosting the opposition at your house was stuff that happened when I was in college. It's kind of rash. You know, it's kind of bush league, but, you know,
That's the way the international trips were. We did it as adult clubs.
Back in the 70s?
Yep. Exactly.
That would have been a fun time. That would have been a fun time. Anybody else? Any other trips coming up? Well, it's great to hear the trips we got. Love to hear the out-of-conference stuff. I understand that the teams in South Florida that are club teams are always going to struggle to get opposition. So I have been asking to try to get folks help with advertising to get people to come down and catch them on their spring break or stuff like that. It's always going to be really expensive to get out of there. But yeah, good stuff, gents.